Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast. I'm Lori Watanabe, your host. Today I'm joined by Steve Mitchell from VA Northeast Ohio Healthcare System. Steve is here to talk about his experiences in building extremely complex power wheelchairs for clients, all while using telehealth during the COVID-19 pandemic. Steve Mitchell is a registered and licensed OT and an ATP. He is a clinical specialist in seating and wheeled mobility and assistive technology for the Spinal Cord Disorder Service at the VA Northeast Ohio Healthcare System in Cleveland. Steve received his degree in occupational therapy from The Ohio State University in 1989. During his time at the VA, Steve has specialized in providing complex rehab technology to veterans who have the diagnoses of spinal cord injury, ALS, or advanced multiple sclerosis. And in that capacity, Steve oversees the configuration and provision of approximately 150 to 200 custom manual wheelchairs or complex rehab power chairs annually. His focus has been on applying the concepts of user-centered design and open innovation to the configuration of complex rehab technology to improve the safety and usability of these products by the populations he serves. Steve, welcome to our podcast. I also want to thank Veterans Affairs for allowing us to talk about what you've termed SCID-CRT.
Thank you, Lori. Good to be here.
This is a podcast, obviously, which means we don't have visual aids, and because of that, I'm not going to ask Steve to go through step-by-step the dozens of part numbers that he used on these power chairs. But what I'd like to focus on instead is, Steve, what your telehealth setup was like, who the other people in the evals and fittings were and where they were, and what technology you used successfully. For instance, you mentioned in other social media posts that you used iPhones, iPads, and Zoom to capture pretty amazing details. One of the power chairs you built was for a veteran who had almost no upper extremity function and is now able to basically operate everything on his power chair. So we're talking about alternative driving controls, power positioning, basically all the things that make complex rehab complex. So let's try to start at the start here. When did you begin thinking of using telehealth to build these very complex power chairs? Were these mostly veterans with more advanced stages of ALS? Did they have secondary conditions that would impact your equipment decisions or approaches?
Well, Lori, the VA is the largest healthcare system in the country, and also we're the largest integrated system of care for people that have spinal cord injuries. Not every VA picks up veterans that have ALS, but we happen to be one of the spinal cord injury services that does. So basically, every power chair I provide is going to be for somebody that's probably going to be a full-time user with a spinal cord injury, more advanced multiple sclerosis, or ALS, which are always challenging to do. The VA is also the largest provider of telehealth in the country as well. And we've basically staked our future on being able to use telehealth to kind of leverage the VA's ability to provide specialty care wherever the veteran needs it at the most convenient time for them. So telehealth's always been a major thrust within the VA. And we've actually, unlike a lot of therapists who weren't really able to provide a lot of telehealth services before the pandemic, because it wasn't going to be paid for by Medicare and it wasn't going to be covered under CMS, VA clinicians had the ability to do that. So because I work at a regional center, I try to expand the services that I'm providing because I've had some success doing some pretty difficult things with some pretty challenging diagnoses. Telehealth would be an effective way for me to be able to kind of broaden what I do locally in Cleveland to other VAs. So I've been trying to use their existing infrastructure for a long time to do that, which the apps are very similar to what a lot of people use on, you know, on their own personal devices, except, you know, they have to follow HIPAA requirements. So they're very, very secure. And they usually take place using the technology we have in our facility, and we might be using the technology on the at one of our other, what we call a spoke site at their clinics, or we do provide in-home services via telehealth too. The problem is with that technology was that the streaming video is just, it didn't have the quality of information to be able to tell the things that I need to see about a chair's configuration to make sure that it's accomplishing my clinical objectives, my functional objectives, and that it, you know, it's fitting right and everything's in the right place. So even though I've been using telehealth for years, it's been a bit of a frustration because of that limitation in the video quality, because I couldn't really tell very accurately what was going on. So I was a willing early adopter, but there wasn't the means there using our approved technologies to be able to do it effectively. And that was basically because I had a hard time seeing the necessary detail at the other end.
I was following your experiences on social media, which you were sharing with us, and at one point you posted a photo of a dog to demonstrate the incredible level of visual detail achievable on an iPad or an iPhone. I was pretty surprised by how good it was. What technology, whether it was tablets or smartphones or conferencing technology such as Zoom or maybe all of the above, what technology proved the most efficient and successful for you so far?
You know, actually, initially it was, you know, using just video alone, it was, at the beginning of this pandemic, it was looking a little depressing because we had several outpatient chairs, some were very high-end with ALS, and I knew using our video capabilities, which are actually quite good and work very well for doing stuff in the clinic where you don't need to see really close detail really quickly. You know, I was actually looking at these chairs and wondering how the heck I was going to be able to deliver them. That's how limited the video streaming technology is, and that's regardless if it's in the VA or any healthcare setting. And a lot of it has to do with the connection because, you know, what video is on a cell phone, it's basically taking a high-resolution image and it's transmitting 29 of those images per second, and there's not the bandwidth connection to be able to do that. So, you know, it was getting kind of depressing looking at these chairs, and I knew the people needed them. I knew because of the pandemic, I couldn't really bring them into the clinic to see me, and I was wondering, how am I going to be able to do this effectively? So then we received an email that allowed us to use what were termed non-public-facing apps to do telehealth sessions. So that opened up using things like Skype, Zoom, FaceTime, because our system, although we kind of staked our future in it, we have quite a substantial infrastructure. The VA just in general moved a lot of its services to telehealth only. And I think 1 month of the pandemic, we did more telehealth sessions per year than the entire previous year. So our services were really getting, you know, overwhelmed. So they gave us this flexibility to use these other apps. And when that flexibility came up, I contacted our contract DME supplier, who they do complex rehab, but they're basically DME for the VA, Carol Gilligan-Chack, who's the president of Health Aid of Ohio. And I figured with this ability to use these non-public-facing technologies, could we maybe set up a couple of iPads? And they already had Zoom conferencing software installed on their machines. And they own both the iPads, and they both have 4G capabilities, so we didn't have to necessarily rely on Wi-Fi. So that was part of my proposal to her. So we started out with the two iPads and Zoom for the video conferencing technology. Now, I've been trying to use telehealth in the VA for years, but we didn't have the ability to exchange images, which I always thought were going to be the thing that could overcome that limitation with the quality of the video I was seeing. And especially if I could ask somebody to take a picture of something and have it uploaded in a reasonable amount of time where I could do the detail, then that would kind of open up the possibility of being able to use it effectively. So after they had big corporate iPhones, so we were first exploring FaceTime, but I guess FaceTime kind of sucks up everything that's on the phone every time you use it. So we were debating between Google Photos and Dropbox, and we eventually established a Dropbox account, you know, that Health Aid owned under the corporation, and we set up private galleries for sharing the images for that.
So when you're preparing prior to a telehealth session, because I presume there's preparation that goes into this, what do you ask of the other members of the seating and mobility team? What do you ask them to do?
During the pandemic, we weren't doing a lot of evaluations over telehealth. We had a fairly large number of relatively complex chairs, some of them highly complex, that were in various stages getting ready for the fitting. So, you know, with the avenue of seeing if we could establish telehealth to do that, that was going to be the big goal. And it's interesting to use the word preparation because, you know, if you look at the different stages of complex rehab service delivery, they have this term that they call preparation. Sometimes they use the term assembly, but the whole philosophy in our facility is we call that pre-fitting configuration. And that's basically because the VA does things a little bit differently. We don't use complex rehab technology suppliers in the traditional sense. Clinicians tend to know a little bit more about the product than in a lot of other settings. So kind of a clinically directed wrenching process. And usually I would do a lot of that myself. Health Aid traditionally does probably 70 to 80% of our pre-fitting configuration. How we do that is I usually go out there on Monday mornings to go over with the tech that I have assigned to me what needs to be done to the chairs. Because we had some chairs that were already in the clinic, you know, awaiting fittings, but we were going to have a hard time bringing people in for a while because of the pandemic, I actually figured, why not use Health Aid's warehouse to be able to do our pre-fitting configuration out there. That way I could socially distance and there'd be less of a possibility of the equipment being cross-contaminated. And when, you know, what I was hearing about the virus was pretty concerning, because they were saying that on the Diamond Princess cruise ship, that virus was being detected on some of the surfaces 17 days after the passengers disembarked. It was highly, highly infectious. And all three populations I work with, ALS, spinal cord injury, and advanced MS, they're all at a very high risk should they contract COVID-19. And the one thing I didn't want happening is I didn't want the chairs becoming a mechanism of cross-contamination or being a vector for infection. So we had Health Aid take all the chairs back to the warehouse. And the stuff that I would normally do on chairs, I did out there. And because I'm involved in the evaluations and I am a clinician, I kind of know how to get them set up very specifically for the needs of the person that's going to be using it. But then the other thing I had to do was when Carol and I talked about setting up the program would be, if we were going to send staff into the home, they also, number one, we had to establish a very good infection control protocol, which Carol was able to do, and we had a very good one. And we had very specific things for what we'd have to do with the chairs. But then I had to train the techs that were going to be assigned to go into the house. In addition to the infection control protocol, they had to learn about the products. And a few years ago, I did that series of articles on how we do our ALS chairs. And we have a lot of custom configuration options that are kind of set up to address the common problems that are associated with the disease, as well as the individual. So what we would do is we would meet on Monday mornings, and we would go over the patients we had scheduled for that week. And I was using that time also to kind of teach them the underlying kind of principles of being able to set up those options so that they understood that. And they were very eager to do that. And it was definitely a lot of fun. Now, with respect to preparing the family, we just basically, a lot of them didn't know that we were going to be doing this whole telehealth process when we initially saw them, because it was before the pandemic. But I made sure that, you know, once Health Aid and I had established what we thought was a pretty sound infection control protocol, was that, you know, I wasn't going to let my chairs become a vector for transmission for disease, and their staff wasn't either. But, you know, I had to make sure that family members were fully confident that it's going to be safe if we were going to do that, that we kind of stated the protocols that we were going to follow. And for the most part, it was very well received. We didn't have anybody that was reluctant about having their staff come to the house to do the fitting. And actually, many of them were pleasantly surprised that they didn't have to come back to the clinic. Because of the pre-pandemic limitations of telehealth, as much as I wanted to be able to do fittings in a patient's home or at another site that's affiliated with us, the technology wasn't there for me to be able to have any certainty that I was getting the outcome that I wanted to. So, you know, once we had the bugs worked out, you know, they were okay with us setting up an iPad in the house and sharing video, and we got the releases and everything. There wasn't anybody that even expressed any slight amount of hesitance being unwilling to do it.
Well, I think that embracing, I guess, by the client and caregivers probably says a lot about how you and your team prepared them and made them feel comfortable. So I wanted to talk also about your big takeaways from these experiences. What was a surprise, if anything? What did you learn from this process?
Actually, it went a lot better than I expected. Now, keep in mind that, you know, as somebody who is looking to leverage telehealth effectively for years using our existing technology, but I just wasn't able, I'd been giving this a lot of thought with, you know, how well it could work. Because I was pretty enthusiastic that images were going to work. I just needed the opportunity to show them. I'm an Android person myself, so I didn't know a lot about, you know, the Mac operating system and stuff. And the only thing I'd used Dropbox before, in my experience, was to occasionally upload documents and stuff. So I didn't know what their image capabilities were as far as being able to transfer movement, but it worked extremely efficiently. So we had two basic channels set up. We had the video feed, which was used to look at activities in the house and for communication. And then we have a separate channel communication, which was basically the detail feed, which was basically the ATP that they sent out with the tech would, you know, use the cell phone. I could request something on demand. And unbelievably, I could see it in about 45 seconds. I'd get a very clear picture of what was going on. And then I could tell exactly what needed to be done. So it actually worked better than I expected. And actually, surprisingly, when you use images to supplement telehealth, it actually gives you more information than you might actually get if you're there in person looking at it. And the reason being is today's cell phone cameras can capture a lot of detail. And with the ability to pinch and zoom, you can really, something looks out of place, you can kind of look at it. Plus, it also kind of channels your concentration a little bit differently because you don't have a lot of distractions going on around and you're just looking at the chair at one point in time. But it worked incredibly effectively. And as a VA employee, I don't endorse any product, service, manufacturer, or vendor. Health Aid of Ohio is our contract entity, but Carol Gilligan-Chack, she assigned like the A-team with me. So I had some very good people working on the other end that I could communicate well with. So we did some exceptionally complex chairs, three of them that had either alternative driving systems or hybrid alternative driving systems for people that had very marginal function. And it worked extremely well. And I didn't have any reservations about being able to use telehealth to get the types of outcomes I was getting. And I felt I was getting probably even a little bit better outcomes than I was getting if people returned to the clinic, which that was about 90-95% of our fittings before the pandemic, because I could see them use the chair in the person's home. So that was a very good information to know, or look at them being able to negotiate the ramp or get it in their vehicle. So it was actually a very enlightening experience in that respect. We always got home evals before we prescribed any equipment, but to actually see them use the chair in that environment and the skills, we can never simulate that in the clinic. So that was one of the huge takeaways because of it.
I thought in one of the photographs that you posted that there was some edema in one of the clients at the ankles. And that sort of speaks to how maybe seeing a still photograph in addition to seeing the video was really helpful, because maybe you wouldn't have noticed it if you were just sort of there in person looking at everything at once. And like you said, a lot of distractions, people talking to you, you're looking at a broad picture. But because you were seeing the video supplemented by a single still image, you pointed out that, okay, I see some edema here. Is that kind of an example of what you meant when you said sometimes seeing a still photo helps you focus a little bit better than being there in person?
I tend to take a lot of analogies and use a lot of terms, but yeah, a well-framed meaning, you know, the person's got, who takes the picture knows how to take the picture correctly, which means probably having some reference lines in the background, but a well-framed picture is worth 29 frames per second easily, because yeah, that was an incidental finding. That was an instance of a telehealth session I did with the Cincinnati VA prior to the pandemic, and somebody was just in there because we were doing a hybrid alternative driving system. It was the first one that I was actually implementing at another facility without having any actual hands-on involvement with the veteran. And they were kind of looking forward to it too. And we ended up getting a very successful outcome. And they were kind of taking pictures of the big event, and they sent them to me the next Monday. And I was just scanning it. And what was eye-opening about it was, you know, I knew that I wasn't seeing a lot on video. I didn't know what pictures could provide for me, although I should, because I probably have more pictures posted out on the internet of different products than any other therapist in the country. That's not a huge bragging claim. It's just that a lot of people don't post pictures of complex rehab. But I could see details that I couldn't see when I did the session the previous week. And one of those things was, I was just zooming in down towards the footplates, and I saw that he had edema in his ankle and it could be adjusted upwards. But I also saw that there was a lot of things on that particular chair, because if you don't have great contrast with video, it tends to get very fuzzy. But there was a lot of things as far as how the wiring and stuff on the back of the chair was being used that I had no idea when I did the video session, and I only saw that when I saw the picture. There's basically the whole concept of being able to plug in the driving control at the top of the backrest and then go down to the set of pre-wired cables and plug it in and configure it for the user. That was totally not even being done, and I couldn't even tell during the session. So it really does allow me to get very, very good detail. And how we kind of use images to kind of make the system work better is when they go to the person's house, Health Aid staff, and they set it up, is they send me four key views of the person in the chair, where the chair is nicely referenced against a wall. It has hopefully some vertical lines and horizontal lines I can use for reference. And then we get a picture straight from the side, from the back, from the front, and with the chair tilted. And before we even get into the video stream, I'm able to look at those four different shots on my cell phone, zoom in, take a look at the issues that need to be addressed, and then we can kind of systematically go through them once we go into the video feed. And then we can take those same shots again at the end to see what sort of changes which were made, which are really instrumental. But there's very little detail things that you can see, and it's not even a super high resolution cell phone camera that you need to get those types of images. for example, my Android phone that's got a 48 megapixel camera, if I take a picture of a chair with that, I can actually read the prints on the cable. We don't need that type of resolution, but just your basic, you know, everyday shot that you take with your phone just gives you a tremendous amount of information. And, you know, you might be looking at one part of the chair, but you can see other potential things too. So it's a whole different way of being able to examine the data by just being able to look at it at a single point in time. And then the video helps out for being able to see the activities for the communication. But it's, you know, when you're doing telehealth in the home, it's always going to be limited just because you don't have the bandwidth to get a nice quality video transmission. But the other big advantage of the pictures is you can pinch and zoom with pictures to look at detail. You can't do that with video either.
Sure. That's an interesting use of sort of combining those technologies.
Yeah, I even came up with a name for it, CVT Plus, Clinical Video Telehealth Plus, because nobody talks about pictures. Hopefully this might be the biggest, one of the biggest things I have to contribute to the field as a result of this pandemic is proving that pictures work. And when you think about it, it's like, duh, yeah, pictures obviously are going to look clearer than video. We all know that. But we never put two and two together to think about when we're using a telehealth session, you know, with complex rehab, that if we're able to look at pictures and video, that's definitely better than looking at one or just the other. You can't look at the activity with the pictures. You can't see the detail with the video. And for complex rehab, it's because it involves so many different aspects, health aspects, person's fit in the chair, but also their ability to function. You really do need both.
So I have one last question for you, and that's what impact all of this will have on how you practice your daily activities going forward. Is what you learned specific to this pandemic, or do you want to maintain these telehealth options even afterwards? So are you already looking at your processes and deciding, yes, this is definitely working for me, this is what I want to hold on to even once we are back in a face-to-face situation?
Actually, I'm definitely all in with telehealth. I was under a lot of pressure to be able to use telehealth because it's a major thrust within the VA. And, you know, with our ALS population, they have a hard time traveling distances. But we're really getting pushed on doing telehealth. And some other aspects of the SCID center where I work, they're providing more and more care via telehealth. So all of a sudden, I don't want to be the one service in our facility that can't do that. But, you know, by the same token, we get exceptionally good outcomes in our program. And I wasn't going to sacrifice those to be able to say, yeah, we're doing telehealth when, you know, I've actually seen custom options I've developed for my ALS chairs. I freely share those things, and other VAs in the country have the ability to get the same options. I've also seen what's happened when somebody's gotten those options and the chairs aren't properly configured. And a lot of times we have to kind of, you know, reconfigure the chair to meet the person's need when we happen to finally see the chair. But, you know, complex rehab is never going to be an industry where we can just prescribe the product and have it delivered and it's going to suit the person's needs. We always have to be able to configure it. So by using this combination of pictures and video, we have the communication. I can see what's going on. I can help somebody on the other end do this. So it's definitely in my plans to be able to expand it to other VAs and even in the private sector. And I hope to be doing some work with the clinician task force and presenting hopefully at ISS on it and getting the word out, or even for the major suppliers like Numotion or National Seating. You know, they're marketing telehealth now, but unless you're using images to supplement it, the clinician isn't going to have the connection with the outcome. And I do firmly believe that images have the ability to do this, where I don't feel like I'm missing out on much being in a clinic when things are happening remotely. And I'm actually getting more information than I would normally get if they were just in my clinic, because I can see them function in the environment. So I'm definitely all in. My biggest challenge is going to be that once the public health emergency comes to an end, it is going to be being able to use the same technology to continue the service. I'm thinking, because, you know, technically Health Aid owns the equipment and they're the ones that are handling it, I'm not going to have to meet all the requirements as if it was all strictly within the VA. And now I've got the evidence to prove that, yeah, with telehealth and pictures, I can do the service, versus if I have to rely on telehealth alone, I'm not going to be able to do it. A lot of industry stakeholders are looking to make the waivers that came out that allow therapists to use the wheelchair management code for telehealth to make that permanent for service delivery. And, you know, I think that could really go a long way to saving costs and providing better convenience and getting more successful outcomes, but only if clinicians are getting enough detail about what's going on at the referring end so that they can see if they're truly getting their outcome. So you know, I'm too a big advocate of it if it has pictures, but pictures have to be part of that equation. And for us to bill a telehealth service, it has to be, you know, effectively the equivalent as if it was a face-to-face service. There really should be no difference other than the services delivered in the person's home or at a remote site. So if we're really truly going to bridge that gap, I think images are going to go a long way towards doing that.
Thanks so much, Steve, for giving us a look at what you learned about telehealth options and the future of CRT or SCID-CRT in the situations you described. And with that, we're wrapping up our podcast with Steve Mitchell and his experiences in telehealth to build complex rehab technology power chairs. Mobility Management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe. You can also go to our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back again soon.